We are in the book of Acts. Studying the book of Acts is especially interesting to me because it's a history story. We're telling stories about people. And the Bible study involved is just getting underneath the English translation and seeing what extra little tidbits we find out about the story in the original Greek. So we are at Cornelius's house. Cornelius is a centurion, a soldier of great importance to Rome. He's from Italy, part of the group called the Italian Band, and he was a ruler over 100 soldiers. Now, he seems to be, in and of himself, a decent person. The soldiers that are with him are personal help and seem ready to do anything he asks. So, but we find he also had a spiritual component. He was interested in and concerned about his soul and about the things of God. Romans had, of course, multiple gods and all these things. But what we find is that he had begun to study with the Jews. Very often we find that when the Jews went where the Gentiles were, or the Gentiles went where the Jews were, that the life that the Jews represented was a testimony. If you can imagine, back at the time of Socrates, when he was, people would come to him and ask him questions. He was asked by one man to help him understand holiness. Not that I don't know what it means, he said, but I just need you to teach me some more. And Socrates said, well, I'm really at a loss. I don't even know what holiness is. And the guy says, oh, well, I'll help you out. It's being like the gods. And he said, yeah, but that's the problem. We have gods who kill and gods who heal. We have gods who steal and we have gods who give. And, who am I supposed to be like? And if I'm like one, am I holy? And if I'm like the other, am I not holy? You know, that's the problem with polytheism, with many different gods. And, of course, having comic strip heroes for gods, you know, I mean, really. These are just men made big. So what we find here is that this makes sense, and their God was a personal God. Their God was one that they could call unto and ask for help. And so he was studying. Well, then God recognized here was a man that would receive Christ if he were told. So he sent an angel and told him to go fetch Peter. We looked at this where Peter is prepared himself to go with a Gentile and to go into his home. And so he does that. So Cornelius then, a devout man, one who feared God with all his house, gave much alms, charities, to the people and prayed to God always. So we find in the acceptance of Cornelius by God, verses 3 and 4, a visit by God's messenger in verse 3. He saw in a vision, evidently about the ninth hour of the day, an angel of God coming in to him and saying unto him, Cornelius. He saw is singular, which tells us that this vision occurred while he was by himself. Evidently is Strong's 5320, phaneros, meaning clearly or publicly. Evidently, we use it to mean probably about that, evidently about that time. This was, he saw him clearly at the ninth hour. It's translated in Mark 1:45 and John 7:10 as openly. So Cornelius was not asleep. His vision occurred while he was alert. And the ninth hour is 3 p.m., 3 hours after noon. The usual hour of evening worship among the Jews, 3 hours before sunset, the end of the day. Now, this word coming in, you saw him coming in. A.T. Robertson points out ingressive second aorist active participle, not present. So he explains that. So punctiliar, saw come, not coming. What this tells us is that in this vision, the angel did not walk through the door. He didn't see him en route to standing in front of him. He appeared, saw him come. And then vindication by God's messenger, verse 4, and when he looked on him, he was afraid. Cornelius looked at the angel. People do this because they're supernatural. They're glowing beings. They appear in the middle of the room. And he said, "What is it, Lord?" Lord here, of course, can mean sir, master. He said unto him, "Thy prayers and thine alms are come up for a memorial before God." This is, I think, significant. Looked is atanizo, meaning to gaze intently. You get this picture of, though it's a vision, perhaps it's a vision of something that was really there, rather than just in his mind. The same word is used in chapter 11, verse 6, translated, fastened mind eyes. The words emphasize the reality of the vision. Another description of the angel in verse 30, we'll look at that. While good works do not save unsaved people, God does take notice. Cornelius was a faithful giver and a prayer warrior. So prayers and alms had been noticed by God. This is God noticing that the person is headed to the right place, you see. Then advice to Cornelius from God, precisely heralded in verses 5 and 6. He tells him who. Now send men to Joppa and call for one Simon, whose surname is Peter. This is just a direct command. Joppa was about 30 miles from Caesarea. Military walking speed is sometimes estimated at 5 miles an hour. The 6-hour trip was probably taken in the morning, we see verse 9 in a bit, to arrive around noon or later at Joppa. Angels are God's messengers, but God allows evangelism only to men. That's why the skies do not blazon out the gospel or a gospel tract. That's why angels do not appear to every single person everywhere to do it. It's not their job. It's not their privilege. It is ours. Where he lodgeth with one Simon a tanner, whose house is by the seaside. He shall tell thee what thou oughtest to do. So send men to Joppa. He doesn't say go. He says send men. So the whole picture is he's sending him out to bring him back, to ask him to come. And he tells him, Joppa's a pretty big city, I'm guessing, at least for the time, and he tells him whose house to check with. Well, precisely heralded, and then promptly heeded, verses 7 and 8, and when the angel which spoke unto Cornelius was departed, he, Cornelius, called two of his household servants and a devout soldier of them that waited on him continually. This is what I say, he seems to be a person who can attract loyal people. Here's a devout soldier, a man who is believing as much as Cornelius does, and who stayed there with him as sort of the head of his household. Waited on him continually, and when he had declared all these things unto them, he sent them to Joppa. Household servants is the word oiketais, and it designates a slave. But the word itself has oikos, house, in it. And it indicates it's a slave as a member of the household, not so much emphasizing the servile idea, just slaves that do anything you say, but rather the relationship that mitigates the severity of the condition. The idea here is that these are people who labor at your house. So there'd be a cook and a maid and whatever these other jobs were. This phrase, devout soldier, Albert Barnes says, a pious man, a man who looked to God. This is an instance of the effect of piety in a military officer. Few men have more influence. In this case, the effect was seen not only in the piety of his family, but of this attending soldier. Such men have usually been supposed to be far from the influence of religion, but this instance shows that even the labors and disadvantages of a camp, soldier camp, are not necessarily hostile to the existence of piety. And I've heard of and known some soldiers, some high-ranking men who were dedicated Christians and had a great attitude, I think, toward Christianity and evangelism and learning and teaching and so on. Now we move to Joppa, where we find the vision of Peter. Meanwhile, back at Joppa, Peter is staying with Simon the Tanner. How Peter was prepared by God for this coming meeting. A human appetite, we see verses 9 and 10. On the morrow, as they went on their journey and drew nigh unto the city, so they're on their way, Peter went up upon the housetop to pray about the sixth hour. And he became very hungry and would have eaten. But while they made ready, he fell into a trance. Explain that the flat roofs of the houses were made accessible by stairs, usually running up the outside of the house, perhaps also in the inside, I don't know. But there is a breeze on hot days. So it was the patio for the Jewish homes in Israel. It was, let's go up to the patio and have a you know, let the breeze come by. Trance is Strong 1611. We get our word ecstasy from this, ecstasis. And it means literally a throwing, throwing of the mind out of its normal state. So this is an altered state of thinking. A.T. Robertson adds, it's thus different from a vision, which is horama, as in verse 3. It's also translated trance in 11:5 and 22:17, translated amazement in 3:10, amazed in Mark 16:8, and astonishment in Mark 5:42. So this idea of when you are amazed, astonished at something, it puts your mind in this kind of a halfway state of confusion, wonderment, not understanding what's happening. And that's what is. He's hungry, perhaps resting, and this happens. So then he has a heavenly appearance, verses 11 to 16. We see the command in verses 11 to 13, and saw heaven opened. In this altered state of understanding, the heavens are open. I don't know what that looks like. Clouds moving away, you know, I don't know. Heavens open, and a certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet, knit at the four corners, and let down to the earth. So we get this idea. It wasn't a sheet, but it was like that. It was something else, something made in the heavens. Wherein, we look now over the top of the sheet, and we see, wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth, and wild beasts, and creeping things, and fowls of the air. And there came a voice to him, rise, Peter, kill and eat. Were is the imperfect active indicative, meaning to begin below, and used for to be there. It says that wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts. So this is, that was there, they were there. A.T. Robertson, imperfect hoparxo in sense of ain, to exist, to be. So he saw that they were there on that sheet thing. Vessel is used in the sense of anything that holds something. That's a vessel. So the command, then the conflict. But Peter said, not so, Lord. Isn't that a strange phrase? "Not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean." And the voice spake unto him again the second time, "What God hath cleansed, that call not thou common." And the voice spake unto him again the second time, "What God hath cleansed, that call not thou common." Not so, Lord. A.T. Robertson says, the negative, medamos, call for the optative, ein, may it not be, or the imperative, esto, let it be. In other words, there's words left out to just understood. It is not udamos, a blunt refusal, I shall not do it. Yet it is more than a mild protest, as Page and Furneaux argue. It is a polite refusal with a reason given. Peter recognized the invitation to slay the unclean animals as from the Lord. Not so, Lord, he says, but declines it three times. Common is the word koinos, meaning shared by all. You have perhaps heard us talk about the Greek of the New Testament is Koine Greek. There was a classical Greek, and that was the Greek of the learned people and of the to be read by the learned people. Then there was the stuff that you wrote your letter to your friend and made your grocery list and so on. That's Koine Greek. So it's the Greek of the common people, the vulgar or the populated language. That's what the word common means here. Therefore, sometimes translated defiled, unclean, or unholy. In other words, the whole world ate this kind of stuff, but not the Jews. Not the Jews. Because they were told to be careful about those things. Notice Peter took great pride in his ritual purity. Now, we'll go back to Mark 7, 18 and 19. Jesus said unto them, "Are ye so without understanding also?" Talking to his 12 disciples. "Do you not perceive that whatsoever thing from without entereth into the man, it cannot defile him?" So if you eat something that was not prescribed, you don't become unholy because of it. He says that thing that you ate, what does it do? It doesn't enter your heart. It goes into your belly and goes out into the draft. You get rid of it later in the bathroom. Then this ends with the phrase, purging all meats. The question mark is because he's asking a question. Don't you understand this? But this comment, purging all meats, is the description that Mark is giving of what this meant. Purging all meats means making all foods clean. This is a departure from the Jewish law. God is teaching Peter that if he changes the Jewish food regulations, he can also change Jewish regulations about Gentiles. This is what the point is. It's not about unclean food here, although he might be asked to lunch at Cornelius' house, I don't know. But the point is, he is giving him an example. I have changed, Christ said so, and I am keeping the change of Jewish food regulations. There is a movement around to bring Christians under the Jewish food regulations. There's nothing wrong with that, just as there's nothing wrong with eating things that are not given to the Jewish regulations. So it's not wrong either way. It's only wrong if you think that you are being more holy than the other person by holding to kosher foods. Now, there's a clear understanding that if you're in a place where they're not being careful with food and food preparation and food cleanliness and so on, you're better off eating kosher. Eat only the foods that God has proved back in the time when cleanliness was not taken very seriously. However, it's not a holy thing. It's a wisdom thing. So God is saying here, I'm the boss. I'm the Lord. So if I say do it, that means it's okay with me. And then the confirmation, this was done thrice, and the vessel was received up again into heaven. So the cords pulled and the corners raised and the thing were taken away. Now, we're not told that he ate any of this. He didn't do any of this. He was just being told, if I say to do it, you better do it. How Peter was prompted by God, first of all, notice his doubts, verses 17 to 20, his secret perplexity. Now, while Peter doubted in himself what this vision, which he had seen, should mean, doubted is diaporeo, meaning to be entirely at a loss, to be in perplexity. Dia is through, so the idea is he's going through this thing where it's back and forth, back and forth. His sudden perception, verses 17b to 20, behold, while he's doubting, what in the world is that about? He's telling me to eat stuff I've never eaten before. Behold, the men which were sent from Cornelius had made inquiry for Simon's house and stood before the gate. They asked directions. Ladies, pretty nice. They got to the house and they stood before the gate and they called and asked whether Simon, which was surnamed Peter, was lodged there. I want you to be those men for a moment. Their boss said, go to this place, 30 miles away, go to this house and ask for Simon, whose surname Peter. Why do you want him? An angel told me to go fetch him. Okay, sure. So now they're there, and there is a Simon the Tanner, and he is by the seaside, and so they're calling for somebody that they have no idea if he's there or not. While Peter thought on the vision, the Spirit said unto him, and this is something not a vision, but just internally, behold, three men seek thee. Arise, therefore, and get thee down and go with them, doubting nothing, for I have sent them. He thought on these things. Unusual compound word. I show you the word there, in thumiomai. It combines in and passion, thumos, or wrath. It pictures a troubled mind, but a careful pondering of the facts, weighing all these things, in a passion of it. Doubting probably means here contending, as it's translated in Acts 11, 2 and Jude 9, or judging, as it's translated in these other places. This is where you're making a decision between things. So his sudden perception, that's what it's about. He wants me to go with these Gentile men. And his decision then comes. First of all, notice his courtesy. Then Peter went down to the men which were sent unto him from Cornelius and said, behold, I am he whom ye seek. And what is the cause wherefore ye are come? And they said, Cornelius the centurion, a just man, and one that feareth God, and of good report among all the nation of the Jews, was warned from God by an holy angel to send for thee unto his house and to hear words of thee. Then called he them in and lodged them. My point here is notice Peter's courtesy and bravery. It wasn't that long ago that they were being chased out of Jerusalem, and people are after them and all that kind of stuff. A soldier is at the door asking for Simon Peter. Natural instinct would be to hide until his cause was made plain. You remember it's Peter that when a woman asked him, aren't you one with that Jesus during the trial? And he denied him three times. This one, far more bravery. The Spirit had told him to go with no debating, no judging. And the word I is emphatic in the greeting. I am the one that you want. When they have the Greek words are out of order, it is with the intention of emphasizing that word. However, he's courtesy, but his caution. And on the morrow, Peter went away with them, and certain brethren from Joppa accompanied him. There's a caution here. This isn't a caution for fear of his life, because these certain brethren with him would not have kept him safe from soldiers and so on. Perhaps the brethren were asked to come so that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, everything could be established. God's doing something special here. I'd like for you to come with me and watch and be able to report. All right. We find now the two participants here have been connected by God, and they begin to arrive. We see here the visitation of Peter, verses 24 to 43. Notice first the meeting that was convened for Peter by Cornelius. When he gets there, he finds things have been prepared. First of all, notice the gathering, verse 24. And the morrow, after they entered into Caesarea, and Cornelius waited for them, and had called together his kinsmen and near friends. His kinsmen and his near friends. The morrow after indicates that it took the larger group a longer time, perhaps twice as long, to go the 30 miles. It's hard to tell when you're talking about this, because Cornelius sent him that, sent them the same day, early in the morning, perhaps. So that would have been the next morning after the vision, which happened at 3 p.m. So they left and got there about the noon hour, and indicating why he was hungry up there on the roof. And then so they stayed the night and then went back. So this could be just that next day, the next day after they arrived. Anyway, the point being that there was the gathering, and it must have been a pretty big house and a lot of people crowded in. He receives a greeting, how Peter was worshipped. This is somebody that an angel told them to go get. And as Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet. That is the act of worship. And worshipped him. But Peter took him up, saying, "Stand up. I myself also am a man." Peter knew that pretty well, didn't he? Fallible Peter. Peter refused such worship. Perhaps he could have remembered that Jesus accepted such worship. We have the record, Matthew 8:2. "Behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, 'Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean.'" Luke 5:8, "When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, 'Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord.'" He had fallen down and worshipped before Jesus Christ himself. Jesus didn't say, "Don't do that." So we find the greeting, and then we find how Peter was welcomed. He says, "And he talked with him and went in and found many that were come together." Talked with is the verb sun omileo. It's an unusual compound word. It means to mutually converse. They were talking about each other. "Well, a funny thing happened. An angel came and told me to go get you." He says, "A funny thing happened. I was up on the roof and had a vision of unclean animals." He went in, and this in itself, we should understand culturally, is surprising for a Jew, and he will be taken to account for it later. He went into the house of a Gentile. They were just not to do that. Many had come together. Cornelius was not going to hear this divinely important message without his friends and family with him. What does this indicate about Cornelius? He believed that this was going to be true. He'd seen the vision of the angel. He didn't enter into philosophical doubts about what happened and whether he was really there or not, all these things. He didn't care what other people thought. And if he was going to get the truth that an angel said Peter could bring, he didn't want his kinsmen and near friends missing out on this. This is sort of our theme for this quarter, talking about how we think about the people around us. we have a message that they desperately need to hear. The guidance. We see God overruled Peter's national intolerance. And he said unto him, you know how that it is an unlawful thing, you being a Gentile living amongst the Jews in this country, you know how it is an unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company or come unto one of another nation. But God hath showed me that I should not call any man common or unclean. He got the message from the vessel, didn't he? Therefore came I unto you without gainsaying, without saying against it, as soon as I was sent for. I asked therefore, for what intent have ye sent for me? That hadn't been made clear yet. You see. So in this mutual conversation, God overruled Cornelius's natural ignorance, his exemplary conduct. And Cornelius said, here's my story. 4 days ago, I was fasting until this hour, and at the ninth hour, I prayed in my house. And his exciting confirmation. And behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing. Glowing clothing is the idea, the shining light. And said, Cornelius, thy prayer is heard, thine alms are had in remembrance in the sight of God. Send therefore to Joppa, and call hither Simon, whose surname is Peter. He is lodged in the house of one Simon, a tanner by the seaside, who when he cometh shall speak unto thee. So a pretty accurate record of this, pretty well sealed in his mind, having an event like this happen to him. And it all to come true. There was a Simon the Tanner, house by the sea. Simon Peter was there, and God had worked with him to come. And then his expectant condition, he was ready to hear, verse 33, immediately therefore, I sent to thee, and thou hast well done that thou art come. I'm pleased. Now therefore are we all here present before God to hear all things that are commanded thee of God. So, Peter, do you have a message for us? Do I have a message? The message that was conveyed by Peter to Cornelius. What Peter perceived. He begins with this. When Peter opened his mouth, then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth I perceive that God is no respecter of persons, but in every nation he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. This is a way of saying anybody can be saved. You don't have to be a Jew. In any nation, there may be those who are led to God. Homer Kent, in his commentary, Peter began his message by noting that God does not show partiality to Jews above Gentiles. Respecter of persons, or one who shows partiality, means literally a face taker, one who just looks at the cover of the book. He meant that God does not save men on the basis of their individual appearance or race. The same thought occurs in the Old Testament, and he gives a list of these verses. Peter was learning the meaning of Jesus' words, other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, this nation, them I must bring. Verse 35 must not be understood as teaching salvation by works, for accepted with him is not equivalent to saved, inasmuch as the angel had told Cornelius that he still needed to be saved. That should be saved. I think I have saves. Needed to be saved. Yeah, saved. Put a D on there. Peter meant that God was obviously not interested in Jews only. For it was clear that in the case of Cornelius, a Gentile who had become a God-fearer and had performed appropriate acts of righteousness, God was desirous that he be offered the gospel of salvation just as the Jews. The eligibility of Cornelius as a candidate to receive the gospel was as valid as that of any Jew. All right, any question about that? Is that clear? Okay. So that's what Peter perceived and explained. What Peter proclaimed. So let's get to the message. We find here the living word, the point of the message, the word which God sent unto the children of Israel, preaching peace by Jesus Christ. He, by the way, he says, is Lord of all. I found in the Family Instructional Guide by Thomas Vincent, the shorter catechism of the Westminster Assembly, and so on. Question 21, sub-question 2, why is he, Jesus, called the Lord? Answer, because of his universal sovereignty and dominion. And they quote this verse, he is Lord of all, Acts 10:36. So he introduces them to Jesus as the very focus of his message. Then the preaching of the message, that word I say ye know, which was published throughout all Judea and began from Galilee after the baptism which John preached. He's saying, you heard of this. You couldn't have been in this land for very long without hearing about Jesus Christ and his message. Homer Kent then adds, this simple outline is similar to the arrangement of the material in the Gospel of Mark and is perhaps the clearest example of the kerygma, which is a term that some of the theologians have used to refer to the earliest form in which the apostolic proclamation of the gospel was apparently couched. In the Gospel of Mark, you have the shortest of the gospel writing, and so sort of a simple outline of what the gospel is all about. The kerygma, I don't like using the term because it kind of grants that their thinking was accurate, and that is this evolutionary development of the gospel. And they're trying to get back to it as though that's going to be more correct than what we have later in the Word of God. That's not how you should think about this. It's just how did they start before anybody knew anything? What was the simplest form of preaching the gospel? That's a proper way of looking at the kerygma, Greek word for message. The proof of the message, verse 38, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. I love this when you summarize the work of God, of Christ, and he did so many things, but you summarize it by saying he went about doing good. Isn't that a great thing? Would you like that on your epitaph, you know? He went about doing good. So that's the proof. And all right, let's look then at the living witnesses. They witnessed the reality of Christ, and we, the reason he sent you to me, or me to you, we are witnesses of all things which he did, both in the land of the Jews and in Jerusalem. All of Israel and in Jerusalem. They witnessed the rejection of Christ, whom they slew in Jerusalem. They slew and hanged on a tree. That's that word for wood or lumber. They witnessed the resurrection of Christ. Notice the chosen few. Him God raised up the third day and showed him openly, not to all the people, but unto the witnesses chosen before of God, even to us, who did eat and drink with him after that he rose from the dead. And you can recall the various appearances of Christ after the resurrection. That's the chosen few. Then the challenging fact. And he commanded us to preach unto the people and to testify that it is he which was ordained of God to be the judge of quick and dead. Quick means living. You know what dead means. The living and the dead. So you don't get out of being judged of God by dying. And then we close by the living way, verse 43. To him give all the prophets witness. Go back to the Old Testament, which was the only Bible they had. Give all the prophets witness that through his name, whosoever believeth in him shall receive remission of sins. So salvation comes by belief in him. So the message gets told. Now, Peter had more to say, and we're going to check into this, but he gets interrupted. And interrupted in the best way possible. The people all got saved before he was done with his message. That was what they needed to know. They had a faith poised, ready to give. They just didn't know what to focus it on. And he had told them, it's on this Jesus Christ. I remember reading of the revivals in the various countries and various times, and that man came to a place that was not experiencing revival and began to preach, but he was only just a few minutes into his message when it's as though the Holy Spirit just came down like a cloud. It didn't appear as a cloud, but just came down upon them all, and people started crying out, "Woe to me, being a sinner," and coming forward and kneeling at the front and crying out for Jesus to save them. And you know, but I haven't finished my sermon. I haven't got to point six yet. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. God doesn't need all of our words. When the heart is prepared, I think God says, let's get on with it.